You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
G'day everybody, welcome back to the ESPN Footy Podcast. My name is Matt Walsh, joined as always by Jake Michaels and Champion Data's Christian Jolly to talk all things footy for another week. 9 games, 18 teams in action, finally. James Sicily's been suspended by the MRO. Footy is so back. Jake, what'd you make of round one?
It was great. You said it. James Sicily suspended. If that doesn't signal footy's back, I don't know what else does. But it was good. Good to have all teams playing. I said it last week. It was a little unfair that we only had 8 teams playing in opening round. Mm. So to have round one, you know, where everyone's playing, it is fair. It's unfair to have some teams getting a run before they play their second game, going up against teams that haven't played yet. So it was good to have footy back. And you know, just like it always is, you're never quite sure where to look. There's things happening all weekend. So no, all happy. Yeah. At the Michaels household.
And the quirks keep coming because there are going to be 2 clubs on the bye this week for round 2, which sounds preposterous to say, but
it's the way that
season 2024...
Well, what do you make of that?
They have to even it up at some point, and I guess they can't get it too close to the second bye in mid-year. I don't know. The fixturing, it's a complicated process.
But it will favour these teams.
Well, I think Brisbane will be very happy to have a bit of a week to reset.
Yep.
I think I'm comfortable with however it runs, but it is weird that we're going to have 2 teams on a bye. One of the things I noticed, if we want to jump ahead a little bit, is Gold Coast and GWS both get the bye during Easter round. So again, give them more exposure. We're trying to build these teams up, but they won't play. But then gather rounds the week after. So every team's back again, and then we have 2 byes and 2 byes. So it's not like we have consistent rounds of byes for the next 4 or 5 weeks.
All over the shop. Yeah. Anyway, we'll see how we go. Heaps to get to as per usual, but before we get into it, Jake, something from the weekend of footy that you noticed.
Well, we should go to Christian. He jumped the gun there a little early. there were a few things I had this weekend. You know, I promised you all that I would make more of an effort with my something
Thank
I
you.
Noticed in 2024.
We had lots of listeners writing in.
We're getting satchels of mail. I was a bit lazy last year at times with how I was... I wasn't taking it overly seriously at times.
Oh.
So I'm making more of an effort now. And I reckon I had 3 or 4 different things this week and I kept writing them down and I would change it. But I settled on my something I noticed being from the Sunday game between the Bulldogs and Melbourne.
Yep.
And it was the amount of sunscreen Christian Petrarca had on his face for that game. Now, it wasn't overly hot. The UV wasn't overly high.
It's high for footy.
Well, it's UV, right? The UV is what you're protecting against, and the UV wasn't overly high.
So you're having a crack at him for being sun smart.
Be sun smart. I'm all for it. But how much sunscreen did he need? It looked like he put white paint all over his face. He wasn't the only one. I think Ed Langdon did as well. There might have been a couple of other players. It just looked... I've never seen a footy player... It was very, 38 degrees at the MCG Boxing Day test sort of areas with some of these cricketers
with
the zinc
that
and stuff.
Footy wasn't played in Melbourne for opening round because that was the weekend. It was 36, 37 in Melbourne. Thankfully, a bit of a reprieve and it was only sort of 29,
I would have
30.
Cut him some more slack if that was the case.
I am a bit blown away by the fact that you wrote down 4 things for this segment and that's the best you can come up with.
Oh, what do you mean? You always want me to come up with something a little left field.
Something for the weekend.
Well, I've actually stolen one from Jake. So this was a query that came through from Jake about Carlton's last 6 wins. So obviously it's not 6 wins in a row, but their last 6 wins, cumulative margin of 22 points across those 6 wins. So I think your question was sort of where does that rank or is it a record? And ding, 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 we do. We stumbled across another record here. Six wins, average margin of 22 points. The next lowest sort of average margin across 6 consecutive, or 6 straight wins, as I said, not consecutive weeks. 1928, St Kilda, who won 6 games with an average margin of 28 points.
Cumulative margin.
Yes. Yeah, sorry, cumulative.
But that's when the games were being won 21-19.
Exactly, much lower scoring. So
on mud pits.
Carlton, you know, finishing this series on top. 1928 St Kilda, 1917 Geelong, 1934 Hawthorn. So all totally different eras. Yeah, 2006 Melbourne is an interesting one.
Okay.
And sixth is the one that caught my eye, is the 2022 Collingwood team. So again, the whole theory about just knowing how to finish in front at the end of the game.
So the Blues had those heartbreakers at the end of 2022.
Yes.
Melbourne and then Collingwood in consecutive weeks, or they were close by.
The final. So it's that whole, is there something? Yep.
Situational training is the big buzzword amongst
100%.
Coaches.
100%, and not to get off topic, but we spoke quite a lot last year about Collingwood, and there were times where we thought, are they that good and what do they do well? And it was one of those things where it's like, well, they just end games with a higher score than their opposition.
The best thing they do than anyone else is they win games.
Yeah. And so far, Carlton, going back late last year and so far what we've seen this year, they're ticking that box.
As a Carlton fan, I would prefer to see a few more 5-goal wins, a bit of percentage on the board. But
how's the heart rate?
Yeah, it's pretty high. I've aged a few years in the last couple of months. Something I noticed, sportsmanship, we like a bit of sportsmanship on the field. We like to see players get around each other. I think they're all quite chummy and quite, you know, good friends on and off the field. I don't think there are too many like enemies.
Well, James Sicily goes and kicks Andy McGrath and he's saying he didn't feel the kick.
We might get to that actually a little bit later. But my thing that I noticed was Saturday night, opening of the completed GMHBA stadium, which I thought wasn't completed in photos until I found out that they were actually putting in a standing area. Yeah. Very nice. Don't mind that.
I think they've just given up.
But Rowan Marshall had to take his boot off at one point. Obviously, it slipped or it had been sort of caught in the grass or whatever. So he took it off for a throw-in. And Grian Myers opportunistically decided to do the opposite thing of sportsmanship, pick it up and fling it as far away as he can. And the umpire saw this. He stopped the game. He said, hang on, we'll throw it in again. Rowan, you get to put your shoe back on. Firstly, I was sort of keeping my eye open for misdemeanor or some misconduct stuff in the review afterwards. But Grian Myers didn't get a fine. Is that something that they should probably look at doing? I think that's...
Should have.
Can't remember the play. I've seen a free kick paid for the exact same thing 2 or 3 years ago, and everyone sort of had a laugh at that and thought, that's not a free kick for throwing away a shoe, but it was the same thing. It was just for game misconduct.
Yeah. I'm surprised it wasn't one or the other, or both. A free kick or a fine.
It's a bit funnily, if the boot's in the area and you're just trying to clear the area, you can move
he threw it.
But he absolutely hoofed it.
I'm surprised he didn't get the laces and lasso it around and throw it 50 metres. You know, the other thing that's ironic is he is the, and as everyone loves to point out to me, the ultimate assist man in the comp. So he failed in assisting to give it back to Rowan.
Hey, another one. Speaking of the Saints playing in that game, the Saints hosting the Pies at the MCG this week for Spud's game. Don't know about this decision. Obviously, they'll get to
be playing at the MCG.
To host at the MCG. Yeah. It's not their home ground. It's actually their opposition's home ground. They'll get 70,000 there. The gate takings will be great, but at what cost?
Well, it's funny because at the start of the season, so they make this decision.
Yeah.
It's their choice. They probably thought, we're not going to beat them, so let's cash in on and let's make as much money as we can out of the game. Now they think, gee, do you reckon if they could change now they would?
It's a good question.
Because they're more of a chance of winning it. I think
windfall will probably be very good.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like the MCG is one of those ones, even as a club, you think, well, if we're going to be any good, we have to win here anyway. Finals are played there. So MCG is sort of one of the venues you're probably happy to give a home game up to and say, well, we're going to go play at the G. We're going to get more gate takings, more experience on the G. So
need to play there,
yeah. It seems a bit weird that they've, as you said, given up their home game against the Premiers from last year. But MCG seems to be one of those venues I think a lot of clubs are happy to play more games at.
I want to put this to the listeners because I don't reckon you guys will have the answer here. No disrespect. But I want to know if this happens in any other sport in the world. Where this situation would arise, where a team sells
their home game, or
well, not necessarily sells, but elects to have their home game at their opposition's home stadium,
right?
Because obviously the sharing of stadiums is quite unique as well, and that's a footy thing.
Some codes,
but this is another step.
It's like the LA Dodgers deciding to go across the road to the Angels and say we'll host you at your stadium.
Yeah,
Everton going to Liverpool and say Anfield free.
Yeah, it's madness. So
let us know. Yeah,
I'd love
on Twitter.
To know if that there might be some other obscure sport out there.
Let's get into it. We've got plenty to talk about today. As I said, off the top, Tasmania's footy team. We've got the announcement of the colours, the logo, the name. We got a foundation footy jumper as well. And earlier this morning, they ticked over 75,000 paid up members.
That's just for this year.
Yeah.
That's not
foundation
that's
membership.
Not, yeah, so that's not buying.
You get your name on a plaque, I think, wherever the club rooms are going to be. And
they
get
haven't
some
figured
stickers.
That out. They've promised to have your name up somewhere. They just haven't figured out where yet.
And some stickers. And you can get to say you were a foundation Tasmania Devils member with the colours. What are they? Myrtle, rose, and primrose.
Yeah, I've obviously seen all the imagery, but if you told me myrtle, primrose, and what rose. Was the other one? Don't know if I would have been able to point to those kind of colours.
Well, you said
on a palette.
Green, yellow, and red. yes, but very interesting. So the big, I guess, the question mark was over the logo and the mascot.
What do you think?
Well, everyone wanted Devils, obviously an iconic animal from the state. Hmm. But the issue was obviously going to be going to Warner Brothers, who apparently owned the IP for that and owned the trademark, and they were going to have a battle on their hands. But it's kind of been revealed in the last sort of 24 hours. Tasmania AFL chair Grant O'Brien, this is according to the ABC's Chris Rowbottom, reveals talks with Warner Brothers over the use of the Devil's name were initially tough. I think they were going to play hardball and be like, why are you using our character?
Yeah, we invented a Tasmanian Devil, I think they were under the impression of.
Things got a lot smoother when the company became aware that the Tasmanian Devil was the actual name of an animal.
That just can't be right.
That's a piss take, isn't it?
You would think so. You would think so. I'm staggered that that's actually come out.
But also, interestingly, so they are the Tasmania Devils. They're not the Tasmanian Devils, and I wonder if that might have softened things as well. So the Tasmania Football Club, their Twitter handle is FC_Tasmania on X or Twitter.
Well, it's not the Melbourneian Demon, so it probably makes sense they are Tasmania. They're representing a place. They're not representing a
point. But obviously, so they announced the foundation footy jumper, which has the sort of the traditional state-based one. So the map of Tasmania with a big T in the middle of it. They've sort of said that that's not going to be the playing jumper. It's just a foundation jumper that they might use as a throwback every now and then.
Absolutely loved it when I saw it last night. Loved the announcement. Really? Yeah. Loved the nickname. And then now that you just told me this morning, you know, before we jumped on air, that this won't be what they're playing in, it sort of made my heart drop.
Really?
Fan of last night. Oh. I thought you've nailed every aspect here. You've picked the nickname that you should have had.
Yep.
You haven't come up with this newfangled jumper
colour
with
or anything.
Different colours. It's the Tassie jumper that we know. If anyone's watched any sort of state football across the last 40 years, that's what Tassie looks like. For me, they nailed it. I haven't told the kids yet, so if you're watching, you expect your memberships to be coming in the membership because I'll be signing them up for two junior members.
So I think just on the jumper though. I think the thing that a lot of, especially Tasmanians, not had issue with, but just wanted to point out was, it's like having the big V. It's like you earn the right to play for that jumper because you are born there, you're born and raised there. So I think it makes a lot of sense to not have that as the team, the franchise's playing jumper.
Yeah, but I get where they're coming from, but it's not getting utilised enough. We don't have a competition. Yeah. We don't have a state of origin competition where we're seeing Tasmania take part every year. So I get what they're saying, and it does make a lot of sense that it's more for representing the state and you're just going to have drafted players obviously come from everywhere in Australia, but it's your jumper.
Yeah, I agree. I think the problem is they have this now. Everyone gets used to it that isn't familiar with it. And then they're going to change it when everyone likes it. And I don't think that's going to go down too well.
Let us know what you think at Footy Tips on Twitter. Coach, who's an ideal first coach candidate for this club?
Rocket?
He's a Tasmanian.
He is a Tasmanian.
Chris Fagan might be under a bit of pressure.
Again, 4 years down the track, Rocket would have to get back in. You'd have to get back in the club later in the meantime.
I don't think it's
Brendan Bolton. Who else is a Tasmanian? I'm just trying to think off the top of my head.
Brendan Bolton's Tasmanian.
Yeah. Fagan's the one. If the Lions,
I think Brendan Bolton's win loss record shouts sign him up.
Well, a lot to play out before they enter the league. That's for sure. Hey, last year's grand finalists. 0-2. Not sure many would have had that on their 2024 bingo cards, especially after just one round of footy, technically.
Well, first time ever, right?
First time both grand finalists have started the season 0-2 the next year.
And it's not, I don't think it's because they've been playing excellent footy and been pipped at the post. I know that the Lions only lost by a point. The Pies looked okay at times, but have been bad during others. But there have been some damning stats for both of these sides through the early part of the season already. Mm. So, Pies allowed 19 marks inside 50 against Sydney after allowing 13 inside 50 against GWS in the opening round, which just, when you think of that, that's 19 and 13 shots at goal automatically. And that's before you think about sort of, on the run or at stoppage or whatever else. Brisbane, the second straight week, they've given up runs of 8 straight goals. It's 48 points in a row at least that they've just been unable to kind of, curtail or rein in. So There are definitely causes for concern for both these clubs. What have you noticed that's really sort of taken the eye in the champion data offices?
Yeah, we'll start. We'll go sort of one team at a time. So we'll start with just Collingwood, just because we saw them sort of first on Friday night for round one. But again, they were sort of beaten two different ways with Collingwood. It was all about, across the two games, the one thing I've noticed is they haven't been able to score from their own back half. So we spoke about the Giants had one forward 50 tackle and probably had more of a setup in the midfield to not let Collingwood through, whereas Sydney was in your face pressure. They were pushing up a lot of high stoppages, a lot of tackles in their forward 50. But the two different styles, whether it's the Giants or the Swans, they've both been able to curtail the Magpies from sort of playing that slingshot football. So scored from four times from the defensive half in round one, six times in round zero against the Giants. So that's 10 times in the last two games they've been able to go from back half and get a score on the scoreboard. They averaged 10 per game last season.
Yep.
And as sort of the number one scoring team from defensive half last year. So that's one part of the game that's sort of gone down. As I said, they were number one across, you know, the however many games we've had. What have we had, 13 games or so? They're 16th for average for scoring from defensive half across their two games compared to all the other teams. So really dropped off in that area. And it is. They've turned it over 47 times in their back half, which is 24 per game, which is very mid-table. Last year it was 21.5 per game, so it's not a lot more turnovers, but it's the value the opposition's getting from. So the opposition was scoring from 30% of Collingwood's back half turnovers last year. This year so far, 40% of the time they've turned it over, it's gone back over their head for a score.
Is that something that's a bit, not luck, but something that can sort of even out as the season progresses?
Again, if you really look late in the season, we spoke about it for the qualifying final against Melbourne in one of the late games against Carlton, they were conceding very high number of inside 50s Collingwood late in the year. So they did have that. Again, we sort of talk about not every team can be perfect at every area of the game. No one's number one at everything. So Collingwood fixed up contest and clearances from where they were in 2022. They fixed that up for the first half of last year, but that sort of dropped off a little bit. And as the season sort of gone on, they were defensively strong. They didn't get scored against, but there was a lot of the game played in their back half. They weren't owning territory as much as they were early in the season. So there was some signs that teams were able to get on top and get a lot more ball forward against Collingwood. Teams weren't able to score again. Obviously, Carlton beat them. Melbourne couldn't get the score on the scoreboard against them. You know, GWS did pretty well, but again, for about a 40-minute period in that preliminary final, no one scored. There was sort of no scores. And Giants got it inside a lot, but just couldn't generate a score from that, and Collingwood were happy to absorb for that 60 minutes.
Yep.
Seems like both times this year, Collingwood sort of had the same setup. They're sort of happy to concede a few inside 50s because we absorb well and we score going end to end well. Neither of that's happened. They haven't been able to absorb, and they haven't been able to go end to end either.
You know, the omission of Nathan Murphy from this side is probably one of the reasons that this is happening. You look at someone like Isaac Quainer, probably hasn't had the start to the season that he would have, you know, in terms of his finish to last year. So there's just a couple of things that, and everyone sort of goes down a couple of percent, and then suddenly it's disastrous, and they are conceding these scores.
And it comes from further up. So again, looking at pressure differentials, so Collingwood would have been number one or two pressure applying team in the last 2 years under McRae, so 2022 and 2023. Them and Sydney were always high up in pressure. But one of the amazing things with Collingwood is their pressure differential. So they usually, again, if you play a game with high pressure applied, you're going to receive a lot of pressure too, because it's a very congested game and players are in the same area. Collingwood's very good at applying pressure on the opposition and then breaking free with the ball and avoiding you know, getting pressure. So last year they had the best pressure differential of any team. Again, the numbers seem low. They had a pressure factor of 183, which, again, 181 is about the comp average, so they were above that. And they received a pressure of 176, which is way down the bottom. So for plus 7 points across pressure differentials, one of the biggest seasons we've seen on record. This year, across the first two games.
So that smaller difference is actually one of the biggest
margins. So 183 to 176. If you're 183 pressure, your opposition's usually about 180, 181, you know, because, as I said, you've congested the game down and you've made it a higher pressure game. Whereas Collingwood, again, 2023, it was very unlike anything we'd been able to see previously in terms of being able to control pressure when the opposition has the ball, but then being able to find so much space once you break free with the ball. This year, across the two games, their pressure is 176. Their opposition, they're receiving 177 worth of pressure.
So they're now putting on less pressure.
Their midfield or all players are under more pressure when they've got the ball, plus they're applying less pressure when the ball's coming forward, which is, you know, not helping the defence.
And I think you could, the eye test sort of backed that up. I think the number of times that Sydney were able to punish those turnovers. And look, Sydney are great team to do this kind of style of play, because their ball users going inside 50 are quite often elite. You know, Goulden, Braden Campbell's a great kick. Blakey sort of streaming off half back there as well. I think
guy named Chad Warner.
Yeah. Pretty so good. it was this sort of meeting of two things where, you know, the pressure was great, but Sydney has the cattle to really punish them.
Yeah, Sydney were the number one kick rating team last year, so I think Sydney is a bit underrated for how skillful that team has become.
I still think what you're saying is not alarming to me, because I think most people right now would say the Giants at worst will finish second this home and away season.
I think
most people would say that. Okay. They're going to at worst be second. Sydney, at worst, probably 6th or 7th.
Well, I had Sydney as my biggest sliders preseason. I've already written that off, like, completely wrong with that.
So yeah. Happy to so if you average that out, that's you're kind of looking at the third or fourth best team. It's not a true representation right yet of Collingwood having played the average football side. That's why I think the numbers are just a little bit distorted at the moment. Once they've played a couple of poorer sides, and we'll get an idea of when they play St Kilda, with all due respect to St Kilda, they're not on the level of the other two sides. I think if you still see this trend, that to me becomes more worrying than right now.
Giants and Swans are both 1 and 2 in terms of the bookies for betting for the Premiership. So it's funny how you can kind of
does that help
last
because
year's,
Well, it does, but I think, yeah, as I said, I think most people right now would be expecting those teams to certainly both be playing.
So if the Saints knock them off, suddenly it's the
when the alarm bells start ringing.
It's 0-2 versus 0-3 for last year's grand finalists,
which obviously would never have happened before. Going back to what we said before, and that would just makes it. I mean, you don't want to go over the top, but it's
whoever loses that's in strife.
Yeah, you'd think
real trouble. Yeah, especially if it's Collingwood and it's their fourth loss. Brisbane obviously have that. They haven't played. They wouldn't have lost 3 at that stage. But
is this the most pressure Craig McRae's been under as coach?
Well, I think clearly, but he hasn't really been under any pressure as coach.
It's a great point. I mean, the close wins.
There was no point where he was under pressure. He came in and just turned the club around so quickly.
Yeah,
this is the first time where it's like, right, now we've actually got some work to do.
So the Lions, what can we see that's going wrong with them? Because I've got a couple of ideas. I think on field they lack a little bit of leadership, and this ability to propensity to allow runs of goals just screams of someone being unable to kind of gather the troops and say, hey, we really just need to tighten up wherever it is on the park. I know defensively, you know, they're missing a few pieces, but stoppage, you know, work harder around the stoppage, get some more clearances, get some more bodies around the ball to sort of curtail the easy exit from the opposition. There was just nothing that was, no switch that was pulled when they were, you know, they scored the first 4 goals of that game as well against the Dockers. And against Carlton as well.
They got such a hot start. Yeah.
And then they just switch off and they're unable to kind of find the switch to get it back on. And I think that's really concerning from a personnel standpoint.
And I think the more it happens, the more likely it is to continue happening, because you become aware of it as players and it becomes something that you're...
The opposition know that they can do that.
Well, they know that you're at any point that can happen. But you as a player on the team that's doing it thinks... is this going to happen? And then once a run of 1 or 2 goals start, it can turn into that very quickly.
What from the Lions have you seen?
Again, I'll leave the goal streaks to a little bit last because I've got a bit more stuff on that. You sort of talk about they're giving away 8 goal streaks in both games. So they're, to start the season, 4th worst score per inside 50 percentage for them. For number one last year, so their ability just to go inside 50 and get that quick score and high value.
So the efficiency's gone.
4th worst across the first 2 rounds. Again, comparing to some teams who have only played 1 game.
But with Brisbane, so just my point about Collingwood having played 2 really good sides.
Yep.
Brisbane having played, by that same logic, Carlton and Fremantle, 5th and 14th last year, that evens out to about your average. It's still only 2 games played. It's a tiny sample size. But it does even out to a pretty average side, which I think is a better representation than if you just played 2 really good sides or 2 really poor sides. So I think Brisbane gives you a bit more indication.
And they're getting the entries.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So they've been pretty good for entries. They're winning the territory across the season. So they've conceded 49 entries in their 2 games down the other end. So that's pretty good. You'd probably target 50. If you can keep a team under 50, we're a chance to win. So both, across the average, it's 49. But they've conceded a goal the sixth most often from those entries this year. Again, they were sort of top 5 in that stat last year. So number one scoring potency last year. So it sort of dropped to 4th lowest. And
do
then
you
the
think
defense
that's
is
defensive personnel
shaky.
Or the structure further up the ground?
Again, it's looking at the numbers and them only playing two games, I'd have to sit down and watch hours of vision. And so that's probably why I'm not in coaching and more in analytics, because, yeah, you'd have to sort of look at how they're being attacked and things like that. So the main thing I'm looking at is the success of it rather than the, you know, the methodology of it type thing. So, but yeah, go on to contested possessions. That's been one area of the game. So they've been, as I said, inside 50s, plus 13 and plus 8 entries across their two games against Carlton and Freo, but lost contested possessions in both games. And that's really been pre-clearance. So last year we spoke about pre-clearance and post-clearance type aspects of the game.
Yep.
Pre-clearance contested possessions, they're not as important as winning in post-clearance, but they're getting smashed in that pre-clearance area, which
means they're not first to ball.
Yeah, negative 13 contested possessions across two games. You think of last year, they were one of the number one teams for scoring from a clearance. Again, they're not getting their hands to the ball, so therefore their points from clearances are dropped because they're just not doing the work at the coalface. So again, looking at pre-clearance, up until round 21 last year, they were 12 wins, 5 losses and 1 draw in the pre-clearance contested possession. So most often coming on top. They're 2-8 across their last 10 games in that start.
This is to my point before about sort of someone, the leaders in the midfield, just being able to sort of say, guys, we really need to tighten up here. So 4 of the top 5 contested possession winners on the weekend, Sarong with 21, Fife with 13, Oscar McInerney with 13. Probably not the guy you want to be having that, you know, that ball in the clinches. Brayshaw 11 and Jackson 9. So 4 of the top 5 were Dockers. And then you're looking at Dunkley, 9. You go further down, Jared Lyons, 7. Rayner, 7. You know, these guys, Berry, 5.
So who is McCluggage, that player? 5. Then? Who is that player? Obviously, we would say Lachie Neale. He didn't play. But as you said, he's played all the other games that date back the 10 that you just said. Who is it? Is it Dane Zorko?
Is it Josh Harris Andrews? But he's so far away.
Andrews isn't the player that's going to be able to do anything in the midfield.
Yeah. So who's the guy that's saying, hey, guys, why not Josh Dunkley?
That's what I was going to say. Josh Dunkley might only be 25 or 26 games into his Brisbane career, but you'd think he's that type of player. Yeah.
I wonder if it's Zorko.
Yeah, a bit of Back to the Future with Zorko. Yeah. I don't think you can be relying on a guy of his age. You know, he's 35. It shouldn't be up to him to be taking these lines and saying, hey, we still need to win a premiership. These guys should be hungry enough.
Mm.
You know, and if they're getting smashed in pre-clearance contested possession, which, you know, loosely translates to they're not cracking in hard enough at the contest, someone's got to put their hand up and say, guys, what the hell are we doing? And I think Lachie Neale put the burners on the side after the loss to Carlton, and they just didn't respond. So that was really disappointing. And now they got the bite to reset, as we said.
As you said, huge match against opportune time. Yeah. I mean, you don't get buys after 2 weeks, and they could not have.
It's almost like a mulligan.
Yeah, honestly.
And you're going up to the Gabba for Easter Thursday against Collingwood. So that'll be a
massive
clash.
It's going to be a massive clash for the totally different reasons to what we initially thought. But as we said just before, if Collingwood lose to St Kilda, it's just going to be a must win for both.
So another number I just wanted to flag. So we've gone about all the things that are issues and things you can worry about for both Collingwood and Brisbane. A number I'll go back to. Collingwood's opposition so far in the first 2 weeks has scored an expected accuracy of plus 13.3%. So 13% better than they're
the highs and lows. Yeah. You know, the Pies get away with the close wins a lot, and sometimes you're just on
things
the back
even
end.
And
Brisbane is the same. So Brisbane, their opposition is plus 11% over their expected accuracy. So just kicking goals from nowhere. And Brisbane's opposition accuracy, so Carlton and Freo have scored at 61% accuracy in those two games.
But that's not sustainable.
The average is around 40-something, you said?
48 to 52. Yeah. Across teams, 52 to 48 is usually what you concede or
so
get.
This is why it's I'm always a high, bit of pump so, the brakes on the alarm bell stuff, because these numbers, they're just not sustainable. You're not going to see this every single week, and it will...
We thought that about the Pies winning the close ones.
Yeah, and we are now seeing that correction. But I think over the course of this year, it's like any kind of accuracy stat. You know, a team can kick 18-7 1 week and then 7-18 the next. And then
16-24, that's the power. Yeah. So, goal streaks. That 8 goals in a row is very interesting, but you've got some other stuff on goal streaks as well.
Yeah, so with Brisbane, the 8 goals in a row, they've done it in both games this year. They only did it once for all of last year. So, there's so far this year, there's been 7 5 goal streaks kicked. Again, as I said, we've had the 13 odd games or so. So 7 times a team's kicked 5 goals in a row. 4 of those have come against Brisbane and Collingwood. So we saw Sydney do it, Giants do it, and I think both of Brisbane's opposition have obviously done it as well. So yeah, just spoke about those two teams. But yeah, just sort of jumped in further into just looking at goal streaks in the last 2 years. And Some of it's pretty obvious. So, you know, which team's conceded the most 5-goal streaks since the start of last season? It's West Coast at 24, North Melbourne at 18. So, yeah, not much surprise. West Coast, a long way ahead, you know. They've conceded 24 5-goal streaks in, 26 games or so, 25 games. But probably the one there that we've always flagged is Gold Coast at 16. So they're the third most. And it has been a worry with them. So if you go to 6-goal streaks, Gold Coast has conceded 11 since the start of last year, which jumps above North. So only West Coast have conceded more 6-goal streaks. And we saw it on the weekend against Adelaide. They got a good start. It was a good 4-point win. You take the victory, you move on. But they did. They conceded 5 goals to Adelaide in about 15 minutes in the wet, where Adelaide sort of got their head up, sort of got their confidence going. And that's when Gold Coast couldn't stop
them. And we saw the same thing
them.
against Richmond in opening round, where they looked like they were going to win the game by 100 points, and then Richmond came storming back.
Yeah. So again, Richmond, 7-goal streaks and losing the game. I think it was only the third time in the past two seasons where a team's had 7 goals in a row but lost the game. Twice have been Richmond. So we saw Richmond in round zero against Gold Coast this year. And late in the year, it might have been midway through last year against the Bulldogs at the MCG where... Again, it was about the second or third quarter. Richmond kicked 7 goals in a row and still sort of couldn't leave with the 4 points. I think Bulldogs got back in front.
Still.
So, as I said, only 3 times the teams kicked 7 in a row and lost. 2 for Richmond, 1 for Adelaide. Adelaide actually kicked 8 in a row against the Magpies last year and lost at the MCG. So it's only twice since 2014 that a team's kicked 8 in a row and lost. So I kept going up from there. So... Again, going back to 2014, 3 times the team's lost with a 9-goal streak. So how's that? You kick 9 goals in a game, still don't get home.
You still lose.
A couple of games I don't remember. Geelong against Melbourne was one of them. Hawthorn against Melbourne was the other. So Melbourne were on the lucky end twice where they conceded up runs of goals, but
what
held on
this,
to win.
Sorry?
And I hadn't got those two. But the one that stood out was the Essendon North game in 2001,
down from
which is
70 points on.
Yeah, one of the most famous games, and sort of 170 to 150 in the end. So just had a look at the streaks. But as I said, the two that I'm watching is Brisbane, the 8-goal streaks, and Gold Coast. Even though Gold Coast are on their way up, it's been an issue for them for 2 or 3 years of periods in games where they give up runs.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were very bullish on the Suns, and I said last week on Red Time I think they have their best list that they've ever had, but that's still a concern, is the consistency and even in-game consistency, whether they can do it 4 quarters.
See how those teams go. Well, obviously the Lions have the bye, but the Pies against the Saints this week, just some fascinating stuff to look out for. Hey,
this episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Time to sound the alarm about the Western Bulldogs at all.
We're sounding a lot of alarms.
Oh, I don't know. President Kylie Watson-Wheeler, who's we share an office with, so if you're listening to this, Kylie, apologies, but we're just doing our jobs, had a massive review in the off-season, the Dogs.
Yeah.
So basically a 6-week sort of thing, involved dozens of people. They made changes to the on-field coaching staff. So, you know, Matthew Egan, Alex Johnson, Jaron Geary, Daniel Prattle brought in around Bevo. Bevo made some big claims in pre-season saying his team was going to be the strongest, the fittest, and the most ready it's ever been for a start of the season. And they conceded 109 points to Melbourne, lost by 40-odd points, and it just didn't look great for a team that has, you know, a lot of talent on the list. And I think,
does it though?
I think the team has a fair chunk of expectation on it. Do we need to reassess what we think the Dogs are?
Well, exactly. That you just said two things there that are important. One, you said they have a lot of talent on their list. I would push back on that. I don't necessarily think. I think they have a decent amount of top-end talent, but I think it falls away pretty quickly.
Okay.
You know, you can say this about any side. If you remove the 3 best players, what have we got left? I don't think any team takes a beating with if you did that quite like the Bulldogs, if you take away their three best or three most important players.
I struggle because where do you have Caleb Daniel in that? Because coming into this year, it's sort of, and he started sub. So
yeah.
Caleb Daniel is an all Australian caliber player, but is he still that this year?
So I think again, I'll look at some of the names.
He came on. That's why in 20 minutes of footy, he had more touches than eight dogs.
But that's what I'm sort of saying. I think they do have the talent. I think if you talk about talent, it's when you look down at the list at pre-season, say how many of these guys could be all Australian this year. I feel like Bulldogs have 8 to 12 players.
8 to 12?
That could, as in,
who? As in
Bailey Dale, Caleb Daniel, as in their reputation
precedes them.
They're not in that form at the moment.
You wouldn't be like, how
Jack
did they
Jack McRae, who didn't get picked.
So Jack McRae is...
If you looked at their team at the start of the year, you'd be like, he could make an All-Australia team. He doesn't even find himself in the team for round one. So that's, again, a lot of it for me is they have the talent on the list. They have guys that have proven they've been talented in certain positions.
The Dogs clearly think they should be better than they are.
This is the other point that I was going to say, is that the Dogs think they should be better than they are, and everyone else seems to have been drinking the Kool-Aid and believing that they should be this...
They made a grand final less than 3 years ago.
I understand that, but look at Geelong. Geelong, this is what happens. Look at Brisbane. When Collingwood, we've just spoken about these two teams, how you just said we're sounding the alarm bells on these two sides as well. The Bulldogs are not that good.
So since winning the flag in 2021, they're ninth for points for, ninth for points against. Does that almost sum them up?
Mid.
Well, it's exactly right. I mean, they're not a bad side, but they're not a... You would have to be surprised if they finish top four this year.
So you're saying that the Dogs leaders, and I'm saying off field, have grossly inflated expectations of where this list is at?
Yes.
So you think finals... did you think I'm going to make finals this year? Did you have them in the eighth?
I think I had them eighth.
Okay.
I think they're around the mark of finals, but I certainly didn't think they would be anywhere near the top four or winning finals or multiple finals that would put them in the mix. I just don't think they're that good. And we saw it last year, the reliance on Bontempelli and Liberatore in particular, it's extreme. And there was it the game against Gold Coast where Liberatore had to be subbed out with concussion, and the game just flipped on its head as soon as he went out.
But he's playing.
I know he's playing, but
Bont's playing. Jamara looks as good as he's ever done. Norton's still playing forward. We might get to that a little bit later. And these bizarre decisions, like having McRae out, despite him playing practice games in the lead-up.
In my opinion, there's just not enough around them. There's just not enough around the top-end players to hold them in good stead, particularly when you compare them to the other sides that I think most people would say are around that fifth to eighth, ninth bracket.
So is Bevo under more pressure now after this loss? You're
always going to be under more pressure after every loss. I think that's a given. But going back to what you said before, have the Dogs inflated how good they are and their expectations? Well, yeah, they have. But that's their job. That's what everybody does. No one's coming out saying we're garbage. We're going to be bottom four this year. Everyone's going to be doing that. That's what we expect. But I just don't think there's enough around the top players, and they're an injury or two away. And I know that's speculation. It may not happen. But as I said off the top, there is no team in the league, in my opinion, that you take their two or three best players away and the drop-off is so drastic. And we've seen that when those guys aren't playing.
And just a very, very quick statistical snapshot of them sort of says that. Like, they've got the talent to sort of dominate in certain areas. So this is going back to 2022, start of 2022 onwards, so since winning the flag. The third best contested possession team, so yeah, they can crack in and win it. Mm. Second best time in forward half team, so can make the ball live down there. 12th for scoring per inside 50 in that time. 10th for moving the ball end to end, as I said, 9th for points for, 9th for points against. 13th for defending ball movement. So there's the raw part of the game of they've got great footballers that can win the ball. They've got a pretty attacking team that can get the ball forward, but they don't have... Again, the connection with the forward line clearly is not there because they haven't been a top eight team for scoring once inside 50. The defensive structure sort of broken down, conceded 140 marks to Melbourne, which teams just don't do.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of times Bulldogs do my head in, to be honest, when I look at them, because there's certain things you're like, you want to be good in contest, you want to be good in time in forward half, and to be the second best team since you won the grand final, that's a huge tick, but you're not getting much value and you're not getting the highest, as I said, second time in forward half. 9th points for, it just doesn't stack up.
Do they need to do something drastic?
We will get to that. I've got a suggestion for you later on. Justified or is it hyperbole?
I'm excited.
Let's move on. Hey, you brought this up actually in the office, and we tasked Christian with looking into this. Bit of a footyism. I know we talked footyisms on this podcast maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
I reckon about 5 years ago. Okay. I reckon it was one of the early episodes.
Well, one of them is clanger. And what a clanger is.
I
think we were looking at one player in particular's game on the weekend. So Hayden Young for Fremantle had 11 clangers?
Yes, right? I think it was. There you go, Jared Barker. Not on track for the All-Australian.
Check out Red Time on a Thursday if you want to know what Jake is talking about. But it got us sort of thinking about what exactly they are, because it seems like you could almost interchange clanger and turnover, and we're not quite sure where one ends and where one starts. What is the definition of a clanger, and why is it still used?
We'll start off with the definition of a clanger. So actually, I'll go back to clanger in itself in terms of the theory of clanger. So again, Champion Data got the license, I think, in 1999 for the AFL. I think 1997 is when Ted Hopkins sort of sat down and started looking at a game of football and what did he want to record in football. He wanted to record how a team got the ball, which is how we end up with hardball gets, uncontested marks, contested marks, and what a team did with it. So, which is kick efficiency, handball clanger, handball efficiency, I won't use the word clanger yet. But he also wanted to jump into, okay, there's things that happen in the football field that obviously have a positive effect on the game. So a good kick, a good mark, a good possession. There's things that have sort of a neutral effect on the game. So you kick the ball out of bounds. It goes to, you haven't given up the ball.
Yep.
You've lost possession, but you still have a chance to win it back. But then there's also the raw errors in a game where you clearly lose possession, either you turn the ball over to the team or you lose possession yourself. So that's where he came up with the word clanger. And I think, again, Ted passed away last year, unfortunately, and he was just a brilliant mind, to tell you the truth, the amount of things he did in his life, publishing and writing poems and playing football and starting Champion Data. It wasn't just stats that he looked at. He looked at the world as a whole and did things for national galleries and things in museums. But I think clangers was just... it was a great term for him to come up with. I think this was the number one selling point for Champion Data back in 99. It was just a nice word where we include clangers, which is every time a person stuffs up on the football field. And I think the name hooked people in. Eddie Maguire on the Footy Show started to love it. And it really, hardball gets and clangers seem to be the two words that Ted came up with. And he invented handball receives and the way we actually name the stats is a lot of a credit goes to Ted. But I feel like clangers is one of the best ones. And I still sort of sit there and smile when I see those Amy ads on the weekend. Clangers happen, I think.
It's entered the vernacular, right?
That's Ted Hopkins, who he sort of said the word was used loosely around footy clubs in the 70s when he was growing up. He'd never heard it again. And in 1997, it just popped into his head, that's what I'm going to call a mistake. And now it's become, a footyism or part of the vernacular. So what is a clanger? Basically, it's, as I said, a mistake on the football field. So it's a disposal clanger. So a kick clanger, handball clanger. Best way to describe
those.
Any
mistake.
When I'm training people, a kick clanger is a kick that you've done that gave your team no chance. So so it's not a turnover. If I kick the ball to a pack and the opposition takes a mark, that's a turnover.
Yeah.
But it's not a clanger for me because I at least gave my team a chance.
Okay.
So clangers are even another, again, and this is why clangers sort of, they preceded turnovers.
Yep.
We had clangers since 99. We really ratified and described turnovers probably starting about 2007, 2006, and that sort of overtook clangers. So I mean, clangers was a bit of an antiquated stat, but it's still out there, and it's still such a nice name, and it's so easy to use that, as I said,
10 clangers. Like...
Now you'll see clubs using turnovers, unforced turnovers, giveaway turnovers, intercepts, but a clanger that you still hear, as I said, so a disposal where you gave your team no chance, either a kick or a handball. And then the ones that people probably forget about is all free kicks and 50-metre penalties are clangers.
Right.
So that can be, exactly. The opposition already has the ball and you end up tackling them high.
It's not a turnover, but it's a clanger.
Exactly. You've committed a clanger because now you've given them a free kick.
But if you get caught holding the ball, it's a turnover and a clanger.
And a clanger, right. Exactly. So
What about a miss shot from 10 metres out?
No, and that is a good one. So a lot of our callers would love to call that. Again, we have a very black and white definition of, it has to turn the ball over or it has to affect play. And exactly that. So if you don't kick it out on the full, if you're 10 metres out, top of the goal square, and you kick it and it rolls out of bounds, we have so many callers that go, can I please call that a clanger?
So what about Charlie Curnow getting run down in the goal?
It was a free kick against, it was a clanger.
It was free kick, of course. Yeah.
And he would have got...
He gets
two clangers.
Because he got dispossessed. So he had possession of the ball and was tackled and lost possession of the ball. That's a clanger. and then the umpire comes in and pays a free kick. And
isn't that just, isn't that all wrapped up as one thing?
A clanger's used it in umpires don't, or
what if the umpire doesn't pay that a free kick? We still want to know that Charlie Curto is not
sure. That's interesting.
So, yes, double counts. Out in the fools don't double count. We had an issue without the fools.
It has to be
because
paid.
It was a kick clanger. Yeah. All out in the fools are clangers. But then we realised, if you kick clanger and go out in the full clanger, you're getting two things for one action.
Yeah, and it'll always be a free kick.
So that'll never double up. So if you kick it out in the full, you'll get a clanger. If it bounces off your toe and goes out in the full, you won't get a kick clanger, but you'll get a clanger because the ball has hit you and gone out in the full. So there's plenty of learning to do. So again, free kicks, 50-metre penalties, disposal, and then lost possession errors. So the other one, so drop marks, no pressure errors is what we call them, and debits. So a drop mark has to be an uncontested mark that you didn't take, and then you've lost possession of the ball. So if you drop a mark and pick it up again,
you don't get a clanger.
You don't get a clanger. It hasn't affected play. Only if you do that in your forward 50, because it has taken away a set shot from goal. So we do have that. If you drop a mark in the forward 50, that's a clanger.
Jeez.
If you drop a mark in defence, if you're good enough to pick it up straight away, you won't get recorded a clanger. If you drop a mark and it goes out of bounds, you will get a clanger because you've lost an easy
possession.
Don't know
if I could be a champion dart
caller. Yeah, so we try to make it as black and white and possible. But you say,
sounding very great.
But with clangers, you say, the more you see an act on the football field, you'll see it and you'll be like, is that worth a clanger? You know, did that have enough effect to be a clanger? So as I said, no pressure errors is lost disposals. Most popular one of that is you try to do a running bounce and you lose the ball. You know, someone bounces and it slides away. So lost possession. And then a debit is another one that we also do. So a good example of a debit. So again, these are all the things that you don't get a stat for that we actually are calling stats for. A debit, spoiling your opponent. So two defenders in the goal square all by themselves and one spoils the ball.
But that's also a clanger.
Yep, we'll call that. And again, we got to make sure that not every time you spoil a team, if it's just unlucky, he almost got it. It's not a clanger. It has to be, everyone could see that this guy was about to have possession of the ball and you've disrupted
it. So when you're calling it, you're saying, that's a debit and a clanger. That's being said straight away.
No, so we don't say the word clanger.
We're
recording single events.
Right,
We're recording if you kicked it. Based on what happens next, that's when you get a retention or a kick that was in the midfield or where it was.
So what was Hayden Young's 11? Do we know?
So, it was four frees against.
Oh, grim.
One 50-metre penalty.
Actually, two of those were within 10 seconds of each other.
Five kick clangers. Okay. So where he just kicked a couple out in the full and straight down the opposition's throat, basically. And one, again, no pressure error, which is just a lost possession. So again, another a good example of that is the ball's handball to you. You should be able to receive it and you drop it and it goes back into a pack. That could be a clanger as well. So
there you go.
As I said, plenty of things get wrapped up, but they are, again, it sounds like we go into the nitty-gritty of it. For a clanger to be recorded, it has to have a big impact on that phase of play. Yeah. So it's not just for every fumble and every sort of mistake.
Fascinating.
We might start a bit of a compendium on YouTube of this sort of stuff where if you want to know the definitions and explainers, we can start doing this again.
I'm pretty sure if you go to Champion Data, I think we got a section on our website where... I'm pretty sure we might have vision examples of it, but again, we'll give you the
Alex, don't worry about
the YouTube
video.
Can we turn his mic off?
Foreshadowed this last week, just quickly. Opening round, bit of a sugar hit for the Giants and the Suns. We had concerns about the crowd. So the Giants had 21-2-3-5 against the Pies in opening round. Mm. Only 8,000 against North Melbourne. 27 degrees, perfect kind of day in Sydney. Wasn't terribly hot.
Well, a perfect day to do other stuff.
Well, that's Suns, 22,886 into 11,446 for their round one.
I didn't think about Gold Coast, but GWS, I did make the thing. I'm like, they should have had a 2-for-1. There would have been so many people so keen to go watch them play Collingwood. Then you think the next week they're going to go and play the 17th place team. And if you're
nearly a third of the
talking about neutral people in Sydney, they just want to go up. But I don't know. Maybe if you could have just tricked people into coming to the second game, going, well, you can come to the second game. You go to the Collingwood game, come to the second game for 10.
Giants are going to be good this year. Go and watch them play.
The Giants?
Go and watch them.
And they're not going to be there for another six or seven weeks. So that's why I said they really need to sell these two games off, because they're not going to be back in front of those people for a while.
I just think it's maybe not unfair, but there's too much expectation that more people are attending these games at this stage of the club, both clubs. They were always going to get more fans there for Collingwood, and the same with the Suns. When Richmond travelled up there, I was at that game. It's 50-50, like at least, if not 60-40 in favour of Richmond to outnumbering Gold Coast supporters. You're not going to expect the same for North Melbourne travelling up to Sydney or, or whatever. So I think people, once again, need to relax, especially you, because you're very hard on this, and you seem to love to, you know, crack the whip with crowds and tell fans that they need to get to games.
Go to the footy.
But I don't necessarily think it's something that'll just be fixed overnight.
Fair enough. They've only been in operation for 13 and 14 years. When are they going to get these crowds?
Well, down the line.
Got him. Anything else in the champion data offices that were sort of floating around statistics-wise? We've got to be quick. We're going to wrap things up really quickly. But anything that really jumps out?
A few. So Jesse Hogan kicked the 6 goals on the weekend. Average expected points from all those shots were 5.49. So we talk about expected scores, yeah, and the hardest shot you go, it's going to go closer to zero.
So easy shots.
He had four goals from right in the goal square, and the other two were directly in front for the corridor. So they were the easiest 6 goals that we've ever captured for anyone, if you want to put it that way.
Easiest bag of 6 you'll ever get.
That's all right, though. But again,
I'm big on that. People used to sort of have a go at Josh Jenkins, who was very popular for getting out the back goals. It's a skill to have. If you can get the ball in a valuable... If you can get 4 goals from the goal square... Yeah, Jesse Hogan, you're doing your job.
Logan McDonald, yeah, he can kick 6 and kick 3 or 4. And I reckon they're all from the goal.
Yeah, so he would have been up there. We've cut it to 5 or 6 goals. But again, if we drop it down to 4, I reckon Logan McDonald's game would come up there. And another one that stood out for me, Caleb Sarong. So he did break the record for Frio's disposals, 46. 2 more than any other Frio player's ever had.
Who was the previous holder of that? Was it your mate?
It was...
David Mundy?
Lockie
Neal. Yeah, it was Mundy, wasn't it?
Ooh.
I'll have a check.
You're the stats guy.
No, that's what I mean. I looked at the number. I hadn't really taken a...
He broke the record for Frio's...
All-time disposal count. That's in a game.
In a game.
I would have thought it would have been Lockie Neal.
I'll have to check that.
Could be wrong.
Okay. I saw that was 2 or plus. But
yes, go on.
Just the mix of the inside-outside ball winning. So we do contested possessions, uncontested. 21 contested, 22 uncontested possessions for him. If you go back across the last 4 years, he becomes the 4th player to do that. So he's done it. Tim Kelly's done it once. Paddy Cripps done it once. Clayton Oliver, 3 times in the last 4 years.
He's good going company.
To have 20 going. Contested and 20 missed uncontested.
Could imagine how many more times he could have done it if he played last year.
Fair enough. Hey, it's time for this segment. Is the hype justified or is it hyperbole? The segment where I say a statement. You tell me whether the hype is justified or I'm speaking in hyperbole.
Which we never actually do.
Never do. Yeah. No, Jared's very good when he comes on.
Oh, is he?
Well, yeah.
Yep.
The Bulldogs must send Aaron Norton to the back line.
Ah, that's what you were teasing before.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of justified.
Surely, finally justified.
Just for the sake of seeing what it offers, the side. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing if everything's going swimmingly and you think, you know, okay, why are we going to mess with
it? Middle of
anything?
The road team.
They've been an exact middle of the road team since the grand final loss.
And if they do have high expectations of themselves, try something different.
Yeah, and he came into the league with so much hype and expectation as a centre-half back.
So one of the things we looked at is what skill translate the best from junior football to senior football. So if you're a good clearance winner as a kid, are you always going to be a good clearance winner and things like that? One of the single stats that stacks up the best is an intercept mark. If you can intercept mark as a kid, you'll be able to do that in the AFL. And I think that's the theory of if you've been able to read the ball off the opposition's boot as a kid, you'll always be able to
and
do
I
that.
Think that is, yeah, not we hadn't spoken about this, but I think that skill, being able to intercept mark, is one of the best things a 16-year-old player can do as they're building towards a career in
and,
the league.
And I feel like it's also, you know, easier to play back and you're looking to intercept the mark or spoil than it is to be a forward to try and hone your craft as a leader to try and... he was out of the game for a quarter and a half, barely saw the footy.
Yeah, so if he goes back, then what happens forward? So
Sam Darcy comes
so,
in.
Exactly, so Sam Jamara's, Darcy comes
Jamara's,
in.
Jamara plays close to goal. Jamara was good on
Jamara's
the weekend,
good.
But he kept
a bit inaccurate.
But he's getting opportunities. A lot of the times he was getting at 55 out
Darcy
of the boundary.
Darcy kicked 5 in a VFL practice game.
He's getting opportunities, Hugelhagen, which is the most important thing. The goals will come eventually. So I think it's justified, especially
get
if,
him in there.
Especially if things don't turn around. I don't think it's going to happen this week.
Yeah. I think Liam Jones will play better as well.
If things don't turn around quickly, I think it's definitely worth a go.
James Sicily needs to take a leaf out of the Toby Green book on leadership development, Jake.
He does. I love James Sicily. You both know that. I love them both, actually.
Deserve the ban?
Yeah.
And depending on when you listen to this, it may have been overturned. We don't know.
He does deserve the ban. I think he's a phenomenal player. I had him ranked 10th best player heading into this season, but he's got that white line fever where he runs out, he can be unhinged, you just don't know what you're going to get out of him, and this is now the third time, as you said, he may well get off, but I don't think he should. It's the third time since he's been made captain, which is another little wrinkle to this, that he's been suspended. And they just can't afford to play without him. They've 0-4 without him since the start of last year. And losing those games by an average of 49 points. He is one of the most valuable players in the league to his team.
Yep.
And he should, whether you agree he should or should not be suspended from it, the simple fact it's being looked at by the MRO and he is getting a week for it, that's the problem. He should not be doing anything that even needs to be looked at. Mm. You've got to be smarter than that, James. You just have to be as a captain of footy club, especially one that's struggling.
Christian, you have been looking at his stats, so I'll ask you this one. Jesse Hogan is crucial to GWS's flag push.
Yeah, I think he is.
He's kicking easy goals.
Yeah, well, exactly. But as I said, he's getting to the right spot, so that means. He's sort of, since the start of last year, he's elite for forward 50 ground balls and forward 50 marks. So I think he gets underrated in terms of he is a two-prong. Yep. He's not just a big key forward that sits at the top of the goal square. He can get up and around the ground and win ground ball. I think Toby was the one you were looking at. But if Toby can end up finishing second on GWS's goal, kicking 10 goals behind someone, and it's Jesse Hogan,
you probably sitting pretty comfortably.
He's already nine behind.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. So if they can have another focal point, let Toby sort of do his thing and have an amazing season, and Hogan just slots 50 goals from the goal square all year, he's going to have a huge factor. And he was starting to build in the finals last year, where he was sort of really starting to take his opponent apart in terms of that confidence of one-on-one and taking those marks.
Who was your pre-season common medal pick?
I had Larky. I think we all had Larky.
I think we did. Would you change now for Hogan?
Yeah, because I wouldn't change now, but I can make a case for Hogan winning it, especially the Orange Tsunami. The Giants are getting
kids. He's getting a lot of opportunity.
And I was very disappointed. Had a sort of a morbid mindset going in, thinking, gee, I was going to have 90 inside 50s here against North. That was going
to
be huge.
I just wanted to see North.
Exactly. They didn't have that many, but there'll be a game. I can guarantee there'll be two or three games this year where Giants get over the 66 entries or 68 entries.
He's going to have a lot of opportunity. He's going to be the man in there, especially because Green does command so much attention. So does take his chances, whether it's the easy ones, even when he's taking the harder ones, good kick for goal. I think he is a massive chance. If he can stay fit, he's never played a full season.
Yeah, good point. Last one before we wrap things up for the week. Tassie away will be one of the most popular road trips for opposing fans when they enter the league.
It's cold.
For you? You like Tassie more than anyone I've ever met in my life.
Just as much as you like Japan.
I think that's a very Victorian-centric...
Maybe you're right. Yeah, I can't imagine the 45-minute flight.
It's only the closest state to us,
New Frontier and footy. You've probably been to Adelaide Oval, or you might have been to the SCG, or you've gone up to the Gold Coast to watch the Suns play. I think the tickets in a potential 23,000-seat stadium will be hot property.
I'm not convinced. I've no disrespect to people of Tasmania, but
2028, you can take the Gold Coast trip or you can take the Tassie trip.
I'm taking the Gold Coast trip. Get out of it. Yeah, I don't want the cold weather.
All right, let's leave things there for this week. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We'll be back on Thursday for Red Time. You and Jared Barker.
Will do.
Talking. I've quite enjoyed the start to Red Time, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
A few little barbs here and there.
He loves to debate.
Bit of a belligerent kind of Thursday.
The gap will get bigger between them, I reckon, as the season goes on. There'll be one on one side of the table and the other on the other side.
Lest they start punching on. I've really enjoyed the start of that. If you haven't checked it out, do check it out. Wherever you get your podcast, but it's under the same banner as the ESPN Footy Pod. So keep an eye out for that on Thursday. But until then, we'll speak to you in the next episode.
Thanks for joining us on the ESPN Footy Pod. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.